The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Spencer. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. First, I want to thank Rob for asking me to speak tonight. And second, it's really great to be here. I've Never Had a Legal Drink is one of my home groups, and it's been a very important part of my sobriety here in New York City the last few years, and I think this is my first time speaking here, so it's an honor to be here. And I also just want to say that, you know, I've asked God, my higher power, for guidance on what to say tonight, so I'm going to stick to my experience, strength, and hope, and hopefully you relate, but if you don't, please don't leave with a resentment. Chat with your sponsor, another alcoholic. So to start with the facts, my sobriety date is November 1st, 2003, so I've been sober a little over 6 years. I'm 34 years old, got sober in San Francisco and moved to New York in summer of 2006 when I had about 2.5 years sober. I have a sponsor, his name is Enrico. I've got a couple of sponsees right now, and I'm currently in the process of starting a long overdue new fourth step, which I'm pretty excited to be doing, actually. And so what it was like. So I really believe for me that my alcoholism runs in my family, and I really just need to look at, you know, my family tree for proof of that, lest I forget it. Both of my grandparents on my dad's side were alcoholics, and on my mom's side, all the men in that side of the family, including myself, were alcoholics or addicts of some sort. And when I was a kid, long before I ever picked up a drink or a drug, I always had the typical sense of feeling different and not fitting in, and just being like so painfully shy and so painfully self-aware. So my first quote-unquote drink or drug of choice was like comic books and reading and video games and TV. And I was often a little kid who, like on a warm summer day, would be up in my bedroom isolating at, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, playing Atari or watching TV. And, you know, when I first picked up a drink several years later, you know, I kind of got the relief and found my first solution for it. And I also will say that I don't honestly remember my first real drink or my first drunk. I have this memory of when I was like 13 or 14, having my friend Matt over, and, you know, my parents, neither my mom nor my stepdad are alcoholics, so they, you know, could somehow magically keep the liquor in their liquor bottles in the liquor cabinet for, you know, years. And I remember having this friend over and sort of trying to mix a little bit of everything into one glass and creating this nasty brown sludge and drinking it and spitting it out and being like, happy adults drink this. You know, and it wasn't until a few years later, it was for me late high school, like junior, senior year, when I really started to experiment with alcohol and drugs. And it was around that time that I first started drinking. And from the get-go, there was just something that, you know, I realized at that early age, long before I admitted I was an alcoholic, that just worked with the alcohol, right? And so from that get-go, I defined my drinking to be binge drinking and trying to drink to blackout from an early age. You know, I really don't have much of a memory of any stage in my drinking career, any time I drank, of really just drinking to get tipsy. There, you know, if I'm going to be totally honest, the goal was always to just get obliterated even from that early age. And so what happened is, I'm from Chicago originally. I moved up to Milwaukee to go to college, and my alcoholism progressed up a notch. And that's where I started drinking vodka, which until I got sober was my drink of choice, because for me, the way vodka works in my body is it got me really drunk, really fast, really hard. And, you know, but I will say that in my college years, I was able to still either control my drinking a little bit or my alcoholism hadn't fully progressed, because I had this experience of, you know, going to a pretty conservative Catholic university, and, you know, as we often do as alcoholics, or as I often do, you know, within those first few weeks, finding the other party kids at the school and befriending a lot of them, and the next year watching a lot of them not come back and drop out. And so I had this fear instilled in me of wanting to finish school in 4 years. So while my drinking definitely progressed during that time, I was able to still kind of like keep it in check and not go full out and finish school. But it was when I was 22 and I moved to San Francisco that my drinking really took off. I was recently out, you know, moved to the West Coast. I can now look back and, you know, say it really was a geographic. I was just running from myself and my family and afraid of life. I wanted to postpone making a decision of what to do after college for a year. So I signed up to do this full-time volunteer program and moved out west. And so when I was out there, I fully fell back into my alcoholism. And, you know, I did the majority of my drinking between the ages of 23 and 27 when I was 27 when I got sober. And, you know, those years now are really just kind of a blur. It progressed to the point of, you know, still being binge drinking, but, you know, 3, 4, 5 nights a week. And I, at the time, told myself that I wasn't an alcoholic, because to me at the time, an alcoholic was somebody who drank every day on a regular basis, or drank at home alone, or drank in the morning. And, you know, I did most of my drinking out at bars and clubs. And I often say that when I share it, because, you know, if anybody in here is fairly new and is kind of more of a binge drinker and is questioning if they're an alcoholic, like I, for myself, am proof that, you know, a binge drinker can be an alcoholic. And so the last, you know, 2 years before I got sober at the end of 2003, so starting around sometime in 2001, I started to realize I had a problem, that I couldn't stop drinking and that life just didn't seem quite right. And I just, you know, realized that I was spending what to me seemed like an appropriate amount of time in bars. It seemed to be all I was doing, but not yet making the connection that it was my drinking per se. And so what I started doing was this cycle of what I would call detox periods of, for some reason, the time period of 2 months was the period for me where, like, okay, if I could not drink or pick up a drug for 2 months, like, I was okay and I didn't have a problem, right? But what happened, surprise, surprise, is that I could never make it the 2 months. And I would often, like, make it a few weeks, and I would still be going out to bars and clubs with my friends, and then I would have one drink and be okay, and be like, okay, wow, I can do this now, and then have, like, the next time maybe 2 or 3, but, you know, a week or two later, I'd be back where I was, kind of wondering what happened, or I wouldn't drink, and I would smoke pot or take ecstasy and rationalize that it wasn't alcohol, so it was, you know, it was okay. And so that just kept going on for a couple of years, and I got to the point in early 2003 where, you know, I broke up with this guy I was dating at the time, who up to that point was a love of my life, and it just sent me into even more of a dark place, and I just started drinking and doing cocaine with even more wild abandon, and getting into some very unsafe, sketchy situations. And it was that year that I really, you know, kind of flash forward a little bit to the end of the year when I, you know, first did the first step, realized that, you know, something was seriously off and that my life, you know, as I would soon learn, was unmanageable. And so that summer, I'll just tell this story quick when I get to sobriety. It was 4th of July weekend of 2003, and I was still living in California, had come to New York for vacation, and this was ended up being about just under 4 months before I finally got sober. And I'll never forget being here, my first full day of vacation. You know, it was 4th of July weekend, it was hot out, sitting in the park off Christopher Street, the piers, and writing in my journal, saying something like, okay, you know, my drinking's been really out of control lately. I'm here for a week, I'm not going to drink, I don't have a lot of money to spend. And, you know, 9 days later, when I was getting on that plane to go back to California, I had gotten blackout drunk like 4, maybe 5 times, spent a lot of money I didn't have, got into a couple of situations, which included I was staying with a friend in Chelsea, going home with someone who lived in Park Slope, not knowing where that was, and having that awful experience that for me at the time was a regular part of my life. Of, it had been a Monday night, and it was a Tuesday morning, kind of coming to at like 7 a.m. and having to ride the F train for 45 minutes back to Chelsea, reeking of like crack sweat, and just having been up all night with everyone who was like all put together and pretty faced on their way to work. You know, kind of just realizing like something, A, something feels off, and B, like how do these people do it? You know, it seemed like the impossible to me. And so I ended up coming into AA a few months later, and you know, what happened is I had a night out that was like any other night, and just woke up that next morning and just had just like, you know, my first kind of real moment, honest moment of clarity of, you know, it was just this quiet sensation. It wasn't a big white light moment, no big like God flash or anything. It was just like the sense of this is it. You know, like this is what my life has become. I'm going to dive. I had this sense that I was going to die if I kept this up. I really did. It was a moment of grace. And I had a friend who I knew at the time had like a year and like maybe a year and a half in AA. And so this was back in 2003 before Facebook. So I sent him a message on Friendster. And we and we met for coffee the next night. And, you know, it just looking back to me, like I never know when I get to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I knew that he was in AA because over a year before I bumped into him at a house party and I hadn't seen him out in a while. And I just asked him how he had been. He's like, oh, I got sober, started going to AA, 15, maybe 20 second exchange. And that planted the seed in my head. And I somehow knew he was still sober. And so I reached out to him and we met for coffee. We traded stories. He's somebody that I totally trusted because I used to party with him. And, you know, turns out he was a binge drinker and drug user too, just like me. So I had the first of what I would later learn was identification with another, with a sober alcoholic. And he offered to bring me to my first meeting the next night, and I just said yes. I figured what have I got to lose? You know, I'll check it out. And it was a Wednesday night. It was a meeting called Friendship Group in the Castro in San Francisco at the time. It was in the basement of the Davie Medical Center, and it was a pretty big meeting, probably like twice the size of legal. And, you know, I can only, again, say that it was an experience of identification. My friend was really great and sort of gave me the play-by-play like 2 minutes before everything was going to happen. And, you know, my hand shot up when they asked if they were newcomers, and I said, hi, I'm Mark, I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, I sat and I listened to the speaker, and she and I, the logistics of our stories were very different, but I, again, experienced that sense of identification and realized that, like, this was it. Like, I had found the place. And so I wasn't working at the time, and I started going to this daytime meeting called High Noon in the Mission District in San Francisco. I lived on the other side of Dolores Park in the Castro, so I started going. And I started bumping into people that I knew. I saw, you know, who I thought at the time were, like, the cool kid, just one, you know, punk rock chick, and I was like, okay, if she can do this, I can do this, you know, and that was what kept me coming back in the early days. And, you know, I also at the time didn't stop hanging out with my drinking friends, and so I drank again on Halloween that year, and I was, just to show you, like, the twisted thinking of my alcoholic mind, it was Halloween, and I was at a friend's house watching people do mountains of cocaine, which in addition to vodka was my other drug of choice, and I was white knuckling it and like didn't know how I was going to stay sober that night, and also didn't have the ability back then to speak up and say I can't be around this, I'm going home. And I ended up getting into this pink limousine with some drag queen friends of mine, and there was a bar in the limo, and the guy next to me made everyone in the limo a drink. It was a vodka cranberry, and he handed it to me, and out of a combination of my inability to refuse it, and then the thought that went through my head of, wow, this would be a much more like glamorous location for a last drink, I listened to it and I drank it. I kid you not, this went through my head. And I that ended up, you know, another moment of grace. That was my last drink, and I stayed out that night until about 4 a.m. And I remember drinking like bar and club hopping and drinking Diet Coke and Red Bull and water and just being really introspective and just sort of sitting with the idea of like, you know, shit, I've already started going to AA, I've identified as an alcoholic and I've had another drink, like, I am an alcoholic. You know, that was the final little, like, click I needed. And so I went back to meetings like a couple days later, kept raising my hand as a newcomer. And later that week, this guy came up to me and gave me his, wrote down his name and phone number. And for whatever reason, he wrote down his full name, and I recognized it. I had, just from the job I had had at the time, I had talked to him over the phone, and because of that little bit of familiarity and identification, he was the first person whose number I'd gotten as a newcomer that I called and took up on the offer to go out for coffee. And so I did it, and that man, his name was Dave, became my first sponsor, and he's the one who took me through the steps the first time. And, you know, that first year, my first couple of years, actually, I just really fell back into AA, and I was willing and I was ready, and I just trusted what you guys told me, and I didn't question it, and I just did it. And you know what? I stayed sober, and I got better. And you know what that sponsor told me to do? He gave me this like daily plan of action of staying sober, which actually I've recently gone back to because I've kind of the last year have fallen out of a regular morning practice. And you know, it included reading some pages in the Big Book, sitting quietly, saying the third and seventh step prayers, and then like picking the meeting I was going to go to that day and sticking to it and not changing my plans, you know, to not go to the meeting to accommodate something else. And we started meeting, oh, and then he said also at night to sit quietly and review my day, which, you know, little did I know, kind of groomed me for the 10th step when I finally got there. And so we also met once a week and read through the Big Book, and I started doing the steps as they're outlined in the Big Book, you know, and I can look back now and then realize that, you know, I was lucky because that sponsor passed down just a really, you know, traditional AA program rooted in the Big Book. And as we started going through the steps, you know, things just started to change. You know, with step one, you know, I wrote out like five examples of powerlessness and unmanageability, and you know, clicked again of like, wow, I can't control my drinking. And when I put, you know, a drink in my body, like, all bets are off, and I don't know what's going to happen. And then we read the doctor's opinion, and I realized, okay, I drink because, or I can't stop drinking when I put alcohol in my body, because I also have the allergy to alcohol, and that, you know, phenomenon of craving happens when I put any liquor in my body whatsoever, and I can't stop. And then we got to two and three, and I quickly realized that, you know, that I thought it was just amazing that I could kind of design a God of my choosing. You know, I quickly realized that I had always, I think, been a spiritual person, but the alcohol and the drugs just totally covered that up and obliterated that part of me. And so I got to like write out what I wanted my higher power to be. And, you know, and at first it was still very like out there, external, otherworldly God that I still prayed to and wrote to every night. And then about 2.5-3 years ago, I had, you know, I guess it was through some step 11 work, just, you know, outside spiritual work I did, I had this epiphany where for me, the sense of God became more of a personal internal thing, and just trusting, you know, what kind of felt right in my body, and just sort of trusting the things that were dropped in my path, and, you know, the synchronicity of life. And to me, that, you know, was evidence of God. And, you know, then I did steps 4 and 5, and I quickly realized like how obsessive I was and how much I held on to everything. You know, that first fourth step, and actually the one I'm working on now is fortunately turning out to be the same way, and I'm getting like another window into how at 6 years sober, it's like, shit, I've still held on to a lot of the stuff I thought I let go of, plus some, you know, new things that have come along the way since. And, you know, and then I sat down with my sponsor over a weekend, and he heard my fifth step, and, you know, it took like 6 hours on a Saturday, a few hours on a Sunday, and then we finished like that Monday or Tuesday night. And, you know, when I did my first fifth step, yeah, I felt relief, but it also, like, I have to say, for me, it was the first time that I like, just this, like, deep level, I kind of felt like I really got AA and sort of understood it. I don't know, I can't explain it. You know, for those of you who are nodding, perhaps maybe have experienced the same thing. But, you know, I stuck around. And then, you know, and 6 and 7, I got to look at my character defects. And, you know, what my sponsor had me do when I was doing the fifth step is, you know, each time he pointed out a new defect, I wrote this list, and then I did all these tally marks. And at the end, I could see, like, you know, what some of my biggest defects were and, what were just a few. And then I prayed to ask God to have them removed. And I'm also, in the last couple of years, have really been getting a new lesson, I think, in 6 and 7, as I've, just been sharing openly with my close friends in the program of what some of the stuff I've been walking through. It's just like some of the getting just a hard lesson in some of the defects or self-will or behavior I'm just, not willing to let go of yet, and how much, pain that can bring me. And then we got to, I did step 8 and 9, and when I made my 8 step list, I remember, writing all these names in the meeting with my sponsor, and he's like, okay, now we're going to go through it, and you're going to tell me what you did to harm each person, and my face just fell. And we went through it, and I started doing the 9 step, and the 9 step for me has been the, and I'm not all the way, I've gotten most of my amends done, but I'm not all the way finished yet. There's at least one that I'm praying for willingness to do, but so far I seem unwilling to do it. But as I did the 9 step, it was really difficult, but I felt the most relief from it. And, it was just hard to go own up to what I did to somebody face to face. But each time I did a 9 step amend, there was a clearing, and an energetic clearing. And, some of the hardest ones I've had to do, I had stolen $2,500 over the course of 4 years from this nonprofit organization in San Francisco, and I owed them $2,500. So I ended up, meeting with their deputy director and just making the amend, and she was really gracious about it. And, it took me 4.5 years of doing monthly payments, but I paid them back. And the other thing I want to say was my process with step 8 and 9 is that, over the course of the years, I got to around years 2 and 3, in reviewing that 8 step list with subsequent sponsors, I realized there were some people I could cross off because, there were a lot of things I did on there, people that were on there, where I didn't necessarily harm the person, but it was behavior I wasn't proud of, and I just wanted to be absolved of the guilt and the shame that go into the other person. And so part of the lesson for me in that is just, recognizing what those behaviors and situations were and praying to God that I don't do them as a sober man, but just, living with the knowledge that I once did them. And then I'll just, finish with 10, 11, and 12 since I'm going through the steps. And, I did an IP inventory for a long time, which then morphed into the spot check inventory, which then the last couple of years has really been no inventories. And, I've paid the price. And so now I'm trying to do an IP 10 step, which a couple nights I've done, some I haven't. But I've also gone back to just writing, and one practice I developed a few years ago, I did regularly for about 2.5 years, was just writing every morning, which to me was it was my God time. It was a way to get the sludge of self out of my head before I started my day, and I've gone back to that, and it's late the last week or two, and it's been amazing just the shift that's happened and how much more grounded and present I am. And then step 12 is, one of my favorite steps because I love to sponsor, and it's how I get to stay sober, and I carrying the message to other alcoholics. So I am about out of time. I hope I said something that you related to, and I'll end with that. Thank you.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.